on to case number 3. Morning, Mr. Bernstein.
Good morning, panel. Thank you for letting me be here today. It's been a long time since I've argued in front of the Seventh Circuit.
You're going to be here for a while, Mr. Bernstein.
I have my morning set up. Panel, I've gone through hundreds and hundreds of pages in preparing for this argument, and as lawyers, we tend to make things more complicated than they are or they need to be. This case is very simple. If we take a look at the settlement agreement and we read the settlement agreement, in the colloquial phrase, it says what it says. It doesn't say what I want it to say, and it doesn't say what opposing counsel wants to say, nor any of the judges below. And
so, in other words, this simple case raises more questions than it answers?
Well, life is like that, Your Honor, but I think there's not that many questions. I think if we take a look at paragraph 11 of the settlement agreement, as I see it, there's two major issues today. One is the settlement agreement, and what does it say? And again, I emphasize it says what it says. And there's the contempt issue against Shipley's. And those would be the two major issues that we have before you.
Well, okay. Excluding the expenses that Shipley's paid before the March 2006 settlement agreement and order, as well as those expenses incurred after the trustee terminated the debtor's business operations, precisely how much are you claiming to have paid in Chapter 7 operating expenses?
Your Honor, we claim we have spent over $1 million in Chapter 7 operating expenses. I recognize that the trustee refutes some of those charges, and I can respect that. Our issue regarding that, though, is if there really is a dispute about that, that's something that should have been heard before Judge Weedoff, because it was a contested issue. The fact that you're raising it here today, Your Honor, implies that it is an issue that should have been heard. If I go in again, if I take a look at paragraph 11 of the settlement agreement, Shipley's shall pay all unpaid Chapter 7 operating expenses above $150,000 and any expenses incurred while the estate continues to operate the debtor's business. That's it. It doesn't say accrued. It says incurred while it continues to operate the business.
If you had abided by the terms of the settlement agreement, okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
And you had deposited the $500,000 into escrow. Do you believe you still would have paid over $1 million, or did the $500,000 represent a limit on your liability?
We did put over $500,000 in to the Dykema Trust Fund account. That was placed there. The problem that we have, Your Honor, just to acknowledge, we did not put it in prior to the closing. And that we clearly did not do that. However, we were required to put only $500,000. We happened to run through more than $1 million because it needed to operate the business.
Well, when did you first begin depositing funds into the client's account at Dykema Gossett? I mean, are there any records that would substantiate your claim that you deposited at least $500,000 into that account after the settlement agreement was reached?
Your Honor, there were checks issued from the Dykema account, which are part of the record, which Mr. Connolly attested to, and those checks all came out of the Dykema Trust Fund account.
Okay, the checks. At least $500,000?
Yes, Your Honor. Now, I think we can all acknowledge that lawyers, we are who we are, and most law firms aren't going to advance those funds for our clients. That was money put into a trust fund account by Shipley's.
This may sound like a lunatic question.
Sure, but in this case, Your Honor, there's no such thing.
Well, maybe just a lunatic asking it. What exactly does Chipley's do as its business?
It had been essentially a lending institution, Your Honor.
A bank?
It's not a bank.
A payday loan operation on the corner of Wells and Division?
No, not that affluent of an area. I'm kidding. It was a lending institution. It actually lent into the bankruptcy, and actually it is part of this record, over $10 million to the bankruptcy, to RTC, pre-petition loans and the like. That's essentially what Chipley's does. It also, Your Honor, and there's evidence about this in front of, well, in this court too, it managed money for others. And there is an affidavit from Mr. Greenblatt that is a much...
Like Mr. Madoff? I mean...
More honest, Your Honor, than Mr. Madoff. But it managed money. It was like a cash management where... Almost like when you have a real estate company, Miglin Beitler used to manage money for the buildings. It would manage money for others in that way. Not invest for them, but to be... money would come in that wasn't theirs, and it would manage and pay off certain bills.
I'll just ask you one more question. I'll let you alone.
No, it's fine.
What behavior can you point to that would demonstrate Chipley's genuine good faith effort to comply with either the bankruptcy court's or the district court's order to deposit the $500,000?
You're getting into the contempt area, Your Honor? Yes. Your Honor, I've spent a lot of time on this issue, so I feel knowledgeable about this. If they don't have money, they can't comply. There was an order entered. And one, they believe, and we strongly believe, that the agreement itself did not require, that it was for operating expenses as it continued, as the business continued. That's one, and they did put in $1.2 million. If we get post-July and September, when we have Judge Kennelly's orders, they had no money in their account. They had a balance of $254.71 at the end of July. And the only so then once that was the only money that was in that account at that time. So once the contempt order is issued or the rule to show cause is issued, the burden would fall to Chipley's to say, okay, we are unable to pay. That's my burden. However, the law is quite clear. It's my burden of production. Okay? Not persuasion, production. And Chipley's produced bank statements. It also produced an affidavit from Mr. Greenblatt stating that the money that was in the account was not its money, and also that the assets that it did have were largely illiquid.
I know, but you have, Mr. Greenblatt's rather unusual, shall we say, claim that he forgot the password to the spreadsheet.
If you had been to their office, Your Honor, you would understand. It's not running like a Swiss watch over there. So.
Is this undercutting your argument in the next case?
I know you're going to ask me that question.
Yeah, so. One of us was.
I know that one's coming.
Just wait till that case.
I know. I've been waiting for it to get teed up. But on the contempt issue, inability to pay, we produced documents. We also produced documents in front of Judge Kennelly, which was a balance sheet, cash disbursement journals. There is a tremendous amount of documents that were produced which show there is no money.
Are you really going to be able to argue the next case without getting yourself in some trouble here?
Yes, but I'll do it very quickly. I was talking to my client in the hallway, and I was actually happy this one was first as opposed to the other way around. But I think when we do look at the contempt issue, I guess two things I just want to get. To the contempt, inability to pay, we produce documents. That's our burden. The burden shifts back to the trustee now to say, you were able to pay. The only thing that the trustee produced at all was a portion of a transcript from a hearing on a different case from February 2008. The portion of a transcript is inadmissible, and it's not very persuasive because they didn't ask what those assets were. Ultimately, it was proven that the assets were of that $14, $15 million, which they keep talking about, was loans. Okay, that's the asset. It's a bunch of loans.
But what would we learn from the entire transcript that would prove your inability to pay or would otherwise, you know, in some way undermine the trustee's assertion that the transcript establishes Chip Lease's access to capital?
Well, because it only had loans. And the other thing it testified to is a cash flow of $150,000. There are documents in the record that were produced before Judge Kennelly which showed the cash flow from that dealt with an entity called Fairfield St. Croix. That asset was sold in February for $1.2 million, and there's cash journals which reflect that. Therefore, the cash flow of $150,000 dissipated. So the only evidence in the record whatsoever is an affidavit from Mr. Greenblatt, which says there's no money, the assets are liquid, they're a loan in a bankrupt entity, okay? And the asset that dealt with the Fairfield St. Croix, that $150,000, is gone. So, and there's bank statements that have no money. How can they comply if there's no money? And we're also, don't forget, September is when the world fell apart in the economy.
I know, but I'm just, along with my sister over here, waiting to hear how, you know, you asserted that you had the ability to pay $3 million when you didn't.
I'm going to have to answer that now. So, on the other one, don't forget there is, I have a light, scattered.
It's not going to save you.
I know. Is there a bell anywhere? Scattered.
Well, maybe, but.
Scattered and Chip Lease were to lend into that. And if we go through the transcript, we see that Scattered was to lend 75% of that, as opposed to Chip Lease lending 100%. So that's my short answer. And also, times are different. I recognize that my argument on the next case is much more difficult than this one. I acknowledge. On this one, though, the one thing
hard
I would...
on this one.
I'm sorry?
Pretty hard on this one.
Your Honor, I think the documents are clear, and I think the fact that Judge Weedoff, when he rules... Because basically, Judge Weedoff had to rewrite the agreement in order to find his ruling. He's a very distinguished jurist. But he finds, and this is in the opposing counsel's brief, in order to be held in escrow for the payment of all unpaid Chapter 7 operating expenses, that sum would have to be held in escrow until all applications for payment of administrative expenses had been received. That's Judge Weedoff's ruling. That's not in the agreement. He had to rewrite it to make that ruling. There's no other way for him to make the ruling.
Well, because it's undisputed that you neither delivered the $500,000 to its counsel as directed in paragraph 11, nor complied with the detailed procedures that were set forth for payment of expenses in paragraph 11.
Your Honor, with all due respect, the money was given to Dykema. There are checks that are running out of the Dykema account in excess of $500,000. So we did produce the money and put it into the Dykema account. We just didn't do it timely. And also, the procedures that are here, we know that the court...
Wait, stop.
Okay.
Because you said something very interesting. Well, just didn't do it timely. No.
Okay. Thank you, Judge.
All right. Good morning, Mr. Bertocchi.
Good morning, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I would like to focus the Court on what we're really talking about here, because Mr. Bernstein has an advantage over me in that he's actually litigated this case, but that doesn't allow him to go outside the record either any more than it allows me to do so. Mr. Bernstein read, as Chip Lease likes to do in this case and has done below, only part of what paragraph 23 of the settlement order says. And this case is about orders. The settlement order says more than just what the money shall be used for. The part that Mr. Bernstein didn't read says the purchaser shall deposit sum of $500,000 to be held in escrow by its counsel, and so on and so forth. That part he didn't read. That's the part that this case is about. It did not happen. Mr. Bernstein says that they put more than that, they spent more than that. But that's not what the order says. The order says it shall deposit, and the reason for the order was to provide security for the payment of expenses. It's separate and apart.
But if that's a separate account earmarked for the bankruptcy estate and held by Dykema Gossett, what more would be necessary for the funds to be in escrow?
Well, if it was, maybe that would have been. But the $500,000 did not get there by the time of closing, which is when it was supposed to be there under the settlement agreement, period. Mr. Bernstein says that the record is full of documents that say they spent more than that. But the record isn't full of those documents. What the record has in it is the Connolly affidavit, which, as Judge Connelly pointed out, you can't rely on. All of the documents he's talking about that says any money was ever put in the Dykema account for any purpose were attached to the Connolly affidavit. And as we explain in our brief, the Connolly affidavit was slipped into the record after Judge Weedoff announced his ruling. Nobody ever brought it up with Judge Weedoff. If you read the last transcript in our appendix, which is the oral argument on the appeal, you can actually see Judge Connelly as he comes to understand what happened with the Connolly affidavit. It was as if it was filed in this court yesterday. It was not considered by Judge Weedoff. It was held to be improper to consider by Judge Connelly, and all of that stuff that Mr. Bernstein was talking about $1 million spent and what it was spent on, none of it should be considered by this court. This court should go back to the question, was the $500,000 deposited in accordance with the order which references the settlement agreement? That's the first thing that was supposed to happen in that process, and as even Mr. Bernstein has conceded today, it did not happen.
That affidavit, it recited Mr. Connolly's belief that he and the trustee agreed that he had authority to review and approve Chapter 7 operating expenses.
That's right. And, well, it talked about some – it talked more, much more specifically on the first page about the understanding that was reached regarding how the trustee was going to spend his $150,000. They were very specific about that. But when you get to what I believe is paragraph 6 of the Connolly affidavit – and this, of course, assumes you can consider it at all, and I don't want to waive that argument. But even if you can consider it, all of a sudden it becomes vague. There was an understanding. And I would point out that if that understanding was accurate, even if you could consider the Connolly affidavit, what that would mean is that the trustee had just reached a settlement agreement that had a very specific procedure in it and then threw it out the window and said, no, we're not going to do any of that stuff. You, Mr. Connolly, you just decide. And, you know, if you think of it, let me know when you pay an expense. But you don't have to, because even the Connolly affidavit says on some occasions they were notified. And in the record, Chipley cites in its reply brief one letter that referred to some expenses that were being paid that came from Mr. Jordan, Chipley's counsel.
Yeah, but why did the trustee fail to object to Chipley's payment of various RTC expenses?
Well, Your Honor,
or am I mixing?
No, trustee. The trustee hasn't failed to object to those payments. The trustee and Chipley's and the administrative creditors have been litigating them in front of Judge Weedoff for a couple of years. And as a matter of fact, although this is not in the record of the case, it's in the bankruptcy file. Judge Weedoff only this month issued an order listing what the administrative claims were. He hasn't adjudicated any of them yet. So the process that's in the settlement agreement has never started. The first thing that was supposed to happen in the process was that money was supposed to be deposited in escrow. That did not happen. That's why we're here. It should have been. The order was properly affirmed. Judge Connelly's order was proper, and it should have been obeyed. The next thing that's supposed to happen is the trustee is supposed to send a payment request. He has never done that. And so the process has not occurred yet. But no money is supposed to leave that escrow under the terms of these orders unless the process is followed.
Well, the settlement agreement specifies that Chipley's is to deliver the $500,000 to its counsel.
Its counsel.
Before the closing date.
Right.
Is that closing date given?
The closing date is the date of the settlement agreement.
It's
March 28th of 2006, I believe, but it's whatever date the settlement agreement was signed. It was supposed to be done at or before that time. And there is an indication in the record that Chiplese's then counsel, not Mr. Bernstein, said it had been done. I think everybody assumed it was there. The rest of the procedure really hasn't been invoked yet. And so I think everybody just assumed it was sitting there waiting while the claims were hashed out in court until these creditors filed this motion and the response was, well, you know, that money isn't there either.
Do you believe that $500,000 was supposed to remain in escrow until the conclusion of the Chapter 7, or was it supposed to be used to pay ongoing expenses?
Your Honor, we have a position on that that we've talked about, but my first response, and I'll tell you what our position is if you want me to, but our first response is that's not ripe yet. Well, our first response is that that's not ripe. Until you put the money in, as Judge Kennelly concluded, you can't really talk about whether it was supposed to be to sit there as sort of like a security deposit on an apartment until you move out and the landlord checks to see if you made any holes in the wall, or if it's supposed to be available to be paid out on proper request. We have a view on that, but our view in this case is it's not ripe. If you don't put the money in the escrow in the first place, then how it's supposed to be paid out isn't really available to be decided.
What's the current status of RTC's bankruptcy?
It's ongoing. Administrative claims are being adjudicated, as I say. Judge Weedoff just published a list, but he hasn't ruled on them yet.
Yeah.
Beyond that, I freely admit I am not a bankruptcy lawyer, and so I can't it's ongoing. It's out of Chapter 7, as I understand it, or at least Mr. Steinberg is no longer the Chapter 7 trustee. But where it is, I couldn't say, beyond the fact that I know they're still adjudicating those claims.
So
or they're still litigating
those
claims.
You're not the attorney of record in Judge Weedoff's court.
No, Your Honor, that was the Arnstein and Lehr firm, which is now where, according to Judge Kennelly, after it went back and forth, now where this money is supposed to be deposited. And he made that change as kind of a remedy after holding Chiplese in contempt. If there are no additional questions, I'll rest on my briefs for the rest of it.
Thank you.
Very briefly, the money was put up. It was put into Dykema. Dykema wrote checks. And I think the fact that the one check that was mentioned that went for payroll that the trustee saw indicates that there was a process that perhaps was not followed. When you get in the real world, they followed a different procedure. Mr. Connolly testified to that under oath. And it's evidenced by the fact that a check was sent for payroll. Mr. Steinberg, the trustee, saw the check come out of the account. So we know that he knew years ago that there was money in the account and that it was not to be used.
How much was that for?
I believe it was for $53,000, Your Honor.
So, okay.
And it isn't the amount so much. It's just the fact that it occurred, that it was a Dykema check, that Mr. Steinberg saw it, and that he knew at the time that that account, that's a course of conduct, was not to be used as a security deposit. And again, in reviewing Judge Weedoff's transcript, his findings are that this is a security deposit. And that's not what the agreement says at all. And that he had to, again, read that into it and rewrite the agreement in order to make that finding. And I have nothing else.
Okay, well, this part of the case will be taken under advisement.